We are continuing our study of Eshet Chayil. Today's class is given refuah shelema of Avraham ben Shafia, ve'ezrat Hashem shav refuah shelema. We're speaking about the subject of Shalom. We explained that Shalom is something that is active. It's not a passive relationship that doesn't have conflict. It's an active relationship where the people involved bring shelemut to each other. They're looking to complete the person's needs, whatever they may be. That is a relationship of shalom. It's kedai, it's worthwhile, while we're on the subject, to study a very famous story in Tanakh, the story of Pinehas ben Elazar. Pinehas, the son of Elazar, the son of Aharon HaKohen. We know the Torah tells us that while in the desert, there was a plan to annihilate and wipe out the Jewish people. Balak, the king of Moab, hired Bilam to curse the Jewish nation after he saw that normal warfare isn't going to cut it. He saw previous big nations, powerful nations, that were destroyed by the Jewish people. He understood that conventional warfare was not going to give him a chance of victory. So he turned to Bilam. Bilam was a very spiritual man. And he turned to him that perhaps we can do spiritual war against the Jewish people. Bilam tried to curse the Jewish people with his mouth. And we see in Parashat Balak that time and time again was not successful. And in fact, the berachot, his curses turned to blessings. Bilam advises Balak, if you want to destroy these people, I can give you how to do it advice. My cursing is not working out. But if you want to get them, I advise you to get them to sin. If you get them to be involved in immoral acts,
will be successful.
You will be able to destroy the Jewish people. That's a very big thing. He didn't tell him, try to get them to be Mehalel Shabbat. He didn't say, go feed them non-kosher. He didn't say, get them to stop doing Brit Milah. He didn't say that. Although all those things are
not really true.
Big items in Judaism. The one thing that Bilam told Balak, if you want to destroy the Jewish people, get them involved in acts of immorality, and you will bring them down without my cursing. Which, by the way, explains why immorality and improper relationships are considered one of the three cardinal sins of Judaism, that a person must give up their life before committing. We know there are three. One is murder, that's easy. someone tells you to kill someone, or I'm going to kill you, you have no right to kill that person. That's a logical halakha. Idol worship, someone says, be an idol worshiper, or we're going to kill you. Person has to give up their life. That's also pretty logical. How can a Jew live with idol worship? The whole essence of a Jew is his connection to God. He's going to serve idols. So what's the purpose of life? As great people have said, if you have nothing to die for, then your life is not worth living. It's a very big statement. In order for life to have a meaning, there has to be something you would die for. Because if you wouldn't die for anything, that means your life doesn't have really intrinsic value. There has to be something where you say, listen, if I do this, there's no purpose to life. But if everything is fine, then there's no real value to life. So anyway, idol worship is one example where if a person's going to serve idols, so his life is not worth living. What's the point of life if you're going to serve idols? You're going to live a life of shikr, a life of false. Good. The third one is, surprise, immorality. Person is forced to commit an immoral act. They tell him, either you do the act or you get killed. Halakha says on any other halakha in the Torah, in such an instance, eating on Kippur, you eat. Get in a car on Shabbat, you get in a car. You don't give up your life. For any other mitzvah. But for immorality, that mitzvah, a person says, I'm sorry, I can't do it. You could kill me. An unbelievable thing. The first two didn't bother us. Either because they're logical or because they go against the very nature of what life is all about. The third one is a very big hidush. Because the third one seems to be one of the things that a Jew is not able to do. The same way you can't eat the things that are not kosher, and you can't listen to words that are not kosher, and you can't watch things that are not kosher. We have a lot of halachot in the Torah of things he can't do. But from all of them, to take one, arayot, immorality, whatever that entails, one must study what immorality means. It means the wrong relationships. It means the wrong actions with the wrong people, the wrong behavior. That mitzvah, or that sin, should be the only one from the 613 that a person needs to give up their life for, is definitely eye-opening. It says something a lot about that area of life. It seems, just from knowing that it's one of the three, it seems that immorality and the Jew cannot coexist. It means it goes against the very essence of what a Jew is all about. And who knew this? Bil'am knew this. You know, to us, to me and you, it's a hidush. Wow, can't believe it. Immorality is so bad. Such a bad thing to do this, to do that, to go here, to go with that. Is it really that bad? I mean, I'm keeping Shabbat, I'm eating kosher, I go to pray every day. Is it really so bad? So you come to this class and say, wow, it's really bad. That's why in our history, till today, there's been a very strong stress of separation between men and women. In the Bet Knesset, in semahot, in chinuch, in education. Always there's a line that is drawn between men and women, so there will not be any kind of improper behavior. There are the laws of Yehud, laws of a person not being allowed to be in seclusion. A man and woman cannot be alone in an office, cannot be alone in the house, even if they have no bad intentions. Very, very specific laws that apply to many areas in our lives, where there needs to be a separation between people who have a danger of getting closer emotionally, physically. How you talk to each other, how you socialize. There are many, many rules, and they start from a young age. The separation between men and women is not a recent hidush. It's the very essence of the Jewish people. And Bil'am knew this. In case you're wondering if a person has to be a very holy Jew to understand this principle, Bil'am the goy understood and advised Balak, "You want to wipe out this nation? Get them to sin in this area and you will succeed." And that was the plan. The pasuk says at the end of Parashat Balak that while Yisrael was in a place called Shittim in the desert, Vayachel ha'am liznot el benot Moav. Am Yisrael got seduced by the girls, by the women of Moab. They made a whole plan for them, how they would seduce them. They opened up markets and they put ladies, and they didn't watch their boundaries. And they started to do the wrong things. And that even led to idol worship. Once they got involved with the wrong woman, obviously it doesn't end there. Once a person is caught up in that world, it leads to many other things. Even idol worship. At that point, a person is connected to Tum'ah, and there's no bottom. Keep going. And this is what happened. And it started to spread. It wasn't one person, it wasn't two people. It became, you know how things are. When someone does the wrong thing for the first time, it's a shock. But then people see, you know, you could do it. By the second, by the third, by the 100th guy, it's already normal behavior. So many people, so many of us, we do the wrong things just because everyone does it. It's not thought about, it's not analyzed, it's not even concerned about, because it's just what everyone does, it's fine. We go with the flow very often in a negative way. And that's what happened. It became popular. It became acceptable it got to the point, and I'm not going to go through why and how, but it got to the point that it became so normal and so acceptable in the Jewish camp. In the camp, the same camp where Bil'am says, Matovu o'alecha Yaakov. When Bil'am saw the Jewish people, that was what caught his eye. The tremendous tzniut, the tremendous modesty of the Jewish people and their separation from each other, each home and each tent, compared to the street and what goes on over there and all the different relationships. He saw a nation, ki am levadad yishkon. He saw a nation that not only lived alone from other nations, but they lived alone from each other. They kept the taharat ha-mishpaha, the purity of the family, the purity of their relationships, their intimate relationships were kept pure. That shocked Bil'am. He was so impressed by them. That's why we use some of his words by every wedding. Matovu o'alecha Yaakov mishkenotecha Yisrael. Why do we use Bil'am's words by a wedding? Perhaps to tell the Jewish couple that even a goy knows the secret of the great Jewish family. You don't have to be Moshe Rabbeinu to tell you how a Jewish family is going to succeed. Even Bil'am, from all the things that he saw, what caught his eye? Their ability to be pure, taharat ha-mishpacha, the purity of the family, the purity of the husband, the purity of the boys, and the purity of the girls. In Am Yisrael, a woman is Kodesh Kodashim. She's the Holy of Holies. Before you go to the Holy of Holies, you got to make sure that you're fit, you're the right person, it's the right time. Can't you walk into the Holy of Holies? The Holy of Holies is a very private room that's there to be entered by the right person in the right time. In Judaism, a woman is called the Holy of Holies and must be treated that way. It got so bad that one of the leaders of the Jewish people, Zimri ben Salu, we're not going to get into his goal and why he would do such a thing, but he made a public demonstration of this lifestyle and this act. Maybe he wanted to show the people that it wasn't so bad, that you could still live like a Jew. Maybe people figured, once we do this, then we can't be Jewish anymore. Sometimes a person, when they do one bad thing, they say, you know what? If I'm going to do this, so it's over. How can I live as a Jew when I'm living like this? Forget it, it's over. Sometimes for one bad act, a person gives up everything. Maybe that was his intent. To show, you know something? Look, I'm still Jewish. I still do 612 mitzvot. Okay, one I'm not so good at. Doesn't mean I can't do Shabbat. Doesn't mean I can't learn Torah. Doesn't mean I can't do anything else. Maybe he was trying to give them hope. For sure, he had some intent. Because even less than him people don't do things like that in public. Obviously, he had a goal. He had some aspect of value that he was trying to give over. But it was the wrong thing to do. The Pasuk says he came in front. This act he did in front of Moshe Rabbeinu. Le'aneh Moshe. It wasn't in hiding. In front of Moshe. Ul'aneh kol adad b'nei Yisrael. In front of everybody. And the Pasuk says, Vayar Pinehas ben Elazar. Pinehas, the son of Elazar, he saw what's going on. If you imagine, there are millions of people there. He saw what's going on. Vayakom mitoch ha'eda. He stood up from all the people. He took a spear in his hand. And he went after this man. And he killed him and the woman. Vate'atzara magefa me'al b'nei Yisrael. It was a plague because of this terrible lifestyle that Am Yisrael began in the desert. They started to be a plague, and the Torah reports that this plague took 24,000 of Am Yisrael died in that time. And Pinehas ben Elazar, with his act, stopped the plague. This is the famous story of Pinehas in the desert. That's the end of Parashat Balak. You open up the Parashat Pinehas, and there it talks about Hashem's appreciation to Pinehas for what he did. So the Pasuk says, Pinehas ben Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen Heshivet Hamati. He calmed my anger. Of course, Hashem doesn't get angry like me and you. When we get angry, it's personal. It's because we're offended. Hashem is not offended. Hashem's angry means He's angry for us. He's burning for us. God forbid you'd see someone that you love and they're hurting themselves. And you're watching and you're getting upset when you see them hurting themselves. He says, Pinehas, Heshivet Hamati, he calmed my anger. Me'al b'nei Yisrael, from the Jewish people, by doing this act. Ve'lo chiliti et b'nei Yisrael bekinati, I did not destroy the Jewish people. Lachen emor. Hashem tells Moshe Rabbeinu, go tell Pinchas. Hineni noten lo et beriti shalom. Go tell him. I'm going to make with him a berit as a appreciation, a deserving honor, that I'm going to give him a berit, going to give him my covenant of shalom. Interesting. V'haytalo uzar'o aharav. What is this shalom? What exactly, what am I giving him? Imagine I tell you, for what you did, I'm going to give you something very big. What is that? Shalom. But what are you giving me? What does that mean? Pasuk says, V'haytalo, ul zaro'a harav. this shalom is going to be for him and for his children after him. Berit, it's a covenant. What's this berit shalom business? Berit kehunat olam. He's going to be a Kohen. He's going to join the forces of the Kohanim. You might ask, wasn't he already a Kohen? He's the grandson of Aharon HaKohen. The way it works is, whoever is a Kohen, his son is also a Kohen. So why does Pinhas need to get the honor of Keuna? He's a Kohen already. The answer is that the only ones that were given the Kehuna was Aharon and his children. And anyone who would be born thereafter from their children would also be a Kohen. Pinhas didn't make it because he was born already before Aharon and his children got the Kehuna. So only Aharon and his children got the Kehuna, and anyone born thereafter. Pinhas didn't make the cut. Hashem left him out. It's interesting, by the way. You see that sometimes Hashem leaves out a person from a certain achievement or a certain
situation.
We'll call it honor or responsibility, because he wants him to earn it himself. Which means Pinhas was clearly left out from the family of the prestigious Kohanim. But yet, he was given the opportunity to earn it himself, which is a greater level of giving it to him. We would think, no, he got the second-class treatment because Hashem gave it to his grandfather and to the next, and anyone after, but Pinhas got left. Imagine if you were Pinhas. How did I get left out of this? No, when you get left out in life from something, it might just very well be that they want you to earn it on an even a higher level. You were left out so you could do more. You weren't left out because they're upset with you. And the truth is, not only did Pinhas become a Kohen from this, all the Kohanim Gedolim came from Pinhas. The Kohen Gadol, the chief, the top Kohen. There are thousands of Kohanim. The top one is the Kohen Gadol. It's only one Kohen Gadol. All the Kohen Gadol of Am Yisrael came from Pinhas. So not only did he get the Kehuna, he got the highest level of Kehuna, but he had to earn it. That level of honor, that level of being a Kohen Gadol is something, it seems, you have to earn it. Hashem left him out, but he left him out so he can get it himself. So when a person feels left out in life, he should look for the opportunities to make it himself. Bottom line, Pinhas got the honor of being a Kohen, him and his future generations. And that honor of being the Kohen is called the Berit of Shalom, the covenant of peace. So there's two obvious questions. There are two obvious questions here on the story. Number one, what does the Kohen have to do with Shalom? We know the Kohen is the priest of Am Yisrael. They do the service of Am Yisrael. They teach Torah to Am Yisrael. But
was Avdut Shalom? And perhaps a bigger question is that who would have ever thought that this act of violence, I mean, it was a necessary act. You see how much Hashem appreciated it. So obviously, it was a worthy act. But we can't deny it's a violent act. He killed somebody in public. So Hashem says, okay, for that action, midah keneged midah. Hashem does measure for measure. He doesn't randomly reward people with things. I said, okay, you did this? I'm going to give you my covenant of peace. What? Covenant of peace? He gave him the Nobel Peace Prize, Labdil. Who would have ever thought that someone who does that act would get the prize of peace? Maybe you would give him the prize of a zealot. Sometimes he needs zealous people to step up and do courageous acts. The act of courage. The act of strength. Give him some recognition. The prize. From Pinhas, all the great soldiers of Am Yisrael will come. That would make sense. The generals of Am Yisrael, when we go out to war, it's going to be from Pinhas. Okay, here we hear it. What do you give him? The peace prize? The shalom prize? What does the act of Pinhas, what does it have to do with shalom? And what does the kehuna have to do with shalom? Those are the questions that need to be answered if we're going to have any kind of luck and fortune to understand and live a life of shalom. What does Pinhas and shalom and kehuna have to do with each other? That needs to be one of the important questions in the sugya, in the subject of shalom. Can anyone here, my dear friends, try to help me understand how we can answer this question? You already have the answer. I'm sitting 3 days on this. You're saying good. Let me explain what they're saying. If we look at peace the way we used to look at peace, at shalom, which is a time of quiet, where there's a lack of conflict, if that's what shalom means, then obviously we're never going to understand how Pinhas' act is an act of shalom. But once we learned that shalom is active, it's not passive. It's not sitting around and having no problems. Shalom is actively building and making shlemut, making perfection. Perfection with the person, within himself, as we learned yesterday. Actively pursuing shlemut and perfecting the person that you're connected to. Once shalom is translated as an active pursuit of shlemut, an active pursuit of becoming more complete, and the person that you're with, to make them more complete, to make yourself more complete. Once that's what shalom means, now we could understand very well what Pinhas and shalom have to do with each other. You see, this act of immorality created a disturbance to the shalom that people had with themselves, with the shalom that people had with their families, and with the shalom that they had with Hashem, the shlemut of Am Yisrael. Because remember, as we said yesterday, shlemut means you're upgrading yourself. You're becoming more complete. When something comes to take away that shlemut, and somebody comes and fights to take that enemy of shlemut away, that is called a person of shalom. For example, a person who sees that there is a negative influence in their husband's life. A woman, an Eshet Hayil, is able to understand that there are certain situations and certain places and certain people that would bring down her husband. He may not know it. He walks around with confidence like men usually do. Me, nobody could break me. I can go anywhere. I could talk to anyone. But the Eshet Hayil knows better. She knows him better than he knows himself. And she knows that by being in this place with these people in this situation, that's not good for him. It's going to lower his shlemut. It's going to be lowering his spiritual sensitivities and lowering him in general. And who knows where that could lead. The woman, the Eshet Hayil, fights. She has to fight to make sure that he's not in that position. She doesn't have to fight to get more money. Doesn't have to fight to get better furniture. Doesn't have to fight to have a bigger home. Those things don't bring shalom. A woman needs to be very, very modest and in the background in certain decisions that pertain to the home. Like the Rambam says, she has to give her husband a certain malchut, certain feeling of a leader, of a king. So sometimes, even when she knows different or she wants different, she may have to take a back seat. She can't be vocal. She can't be in the front. But the Eshet Hayil, if she's going to create shalom in her home, she needs to be in the forefront, fighting. When there is a disturbance to the shalom of her husband and her children, that is not an act of aggressive war that women don't do. No. That's an act of shalom bayit. I know, some great women that understand this very well. And while they're humble and modest and hardly raise their voice for anything, but for example, they are a woman that will not allow their husband to sleep out at night. They saw that this is dangerous for their husband. So they have a rule: you can't sleep out. Others felt that's not something that either doable for him or not so dangerous for him. But they have a rule. You can't go more than 2 days. Or you can't be alone on Shabbat. Or you can't go to certain places. Or you can't be with certain people. You say, why? A woman is making up rules now? Isn't he the melech? Isn't he the king? The woman is going to go now and tell him that, I'm sorry, in this marriage, you can't do this. You can't be married to me and do this. I'm sorry. what is going on with that?
Yeah.
Well, guess what?
When Shalom is at stake,
Pinchas wasn't the number one person in the Jewish nation at the time. There was Moshe Rabbeinu. There was Aharon HaKohen. There was Elazar, his father. There were people bigger than him to do this act.
But when it comes to an act that is disturbing Shalom, there's no more hierarchy. There's no more, oh, it's not my place. I'm not the king here. Let Moshe do this. Let Aharon do it. Let my father do it. When there is a danger of shlemut, everyone becomes a melech. Everyone becomes a king. All of a sudden, this Eshet Hayil, this modest woman who's in the background giving malchut to her husband, all of a sudden, she comes out like a lion. I'm sorry, you cannot do this. You cannot bring that into the home. A person watching on the outside says, what happened to this woman? She became a warrior. She became so... No, no, no. That's Shalom. She is Rodef Shalom. She's running after Shalom. Shalom is not passive. So I'm not sitting back and waiting for things to happen. Shalom could be anticipating. Shalom could be worrying about the destruction of a husband or a child. You know how much shalom a woman has to run after regarding her children? To be active, that we don't bring that into the home. We don't talk like that here. You can't be with that friend. You can't be in that place. Of course, has to be done bechokhmah.
Can't walk around with an arrow. Can't walk around with a sword. I don't know how to be a strong warrior too.
But it has to be one of the important jobs of an Eshet Hayil. The Hayil is to bring Shlemut into her home and Shalom into her home. You're not going to be able to bring Shalom into your home if you don't fight the powers that are coming to lower it. So for her children, for her husband, that's one of her most critical jobs. To fight about the furniture, that's not an Eshet Hayil. To be upset because of a vacation, that's not an Eshet Hayil. She needs this, wants jewelry, she wants it. That's not an Eshet Hayil. For those things, she could just sit in the background. She likes them, she wants, yes, no, once in a while, fine. For that, you never hear her open her mouth. She's not fighting for things of that nature. But there's one area that the Eshet Hayil comes out with strength. And that is to make shalom in her home by going out to war against the dangers of shlemut of her home, her husband, and her children. Is that not what Sarah Imenu did? In front of her king, Avraham. Avraham is the king. Sarah is the woman in the ohel. She's the woman in the tent. But yet, when she saw the influence of Yishmael on her son Yitzhak, she came out like a lion. She told Avraham, that kid, your son, cannot be here. Do you understand what it takes to tell someone that your son has to be thrown out of the house? And imagine it's Sarah Imenu, the modest woman. And imagine you're talking to Avraham, the king, not just of the house. He's the king. Nesi Elohim ata betochenu. He's a king of society. And you're asking him to do the most difficult act. What seems to be almost a cruel act. Would you imagine Sarah Imenu getting up like a lion and telling Abraham, that boy is not going to be in this house. Listen to me. And Abraham says, no. What do you mean? It's my son. No. He's not staying here. Never did we see in the Torah such a conversation with Sarah and Abraham. That she went and said, Abraham, you must do this. What happened to the Rambam? Sarah Imenu, what happened to? He has to be kesar, like a minister, like a melech. She does everything according to his wishes. Well, what happened to the Rambam? Sarah Imenu forgot the Rambam.
Sarah Imenu is an eshet hayil who is pursuing shalom in her home. And when she sees something gonna come and destroy the shlemut of her son, no longer is she sitting in the background. She takes front and center, and she's gonna go up against the husband. And Hashem got involved in this conversation because it was a very big shock to Abraham and very hard. Hashem says to Abraham, listen to her. She's a woman who's an eshet hayil. She is in charge of the shalom of this home. She's the general of shalom at this home. She is greater than you in this area. And therefore, she's right to come out against the bad influences. Could you imagine? That is the power area of the woman. If a woman comes out against the husband in any other area, we have to see if it's really an eshet hayil type of conversation. She says, I want this, I want that, we have to go here, we have to do this. We like to do a lot of things, but not always do we have to do it. If we see a woman strong in any other area, we have to analyze. But one of the areas we look for in an eshet hayil, we have to look for, is this woman an eshet hayil? Well, let's see. Is she strong when it comes to her husband and her children in the negative influences that go into their lives, into their home, into what they're seeing, to what they're watching, into what they're listening to, and who they're spending time with, and putting themselves in dangerous places? Is she strong like that? Or she leaves that to her husband? She said, no, that's his job. I don't get involved in those things. That's, what do you mean? That's your job. You're called an eshet hayil. You're the general of the hayil. You're the general that makes shalom in this home, shlemut. That's why Pinhas was given shalom. He brought shlemut to Am Yisrael. Am Yisrael was going down. He brought them to be complete with themselves, with each other, with Hashem. Shalom is active pursuit of shlemut, not a passive quiet of conflict. And that's why the Kohanim are called people of shalom. Kohanim are out there teaching people how to become more complete, what they should be doing in life, what they shouldn't be doing. They bring korbanot, the word korban is lekarev, to bring them close to Hashem, to bring shlemut between the relationship between Hashem and Am Yisrael. That's what a Kohen does. He brings shlemut to people. That's his job, between shlemut to himself, to each other, and to Hashem. Shalom is active, and the eshet hayil is the leader of that activity. Have a wonderful day.